The purpose of this session today is actually, it's quite very funny, this history. I started thinking about this because I do a lot of work with some companies and play with my demos. And I was always on that situation where I had to build like a domain controller, a GCP server, and a web server, a SQL server, sometimes an Exchange server on my own machine. And I was thinking, so if I'm on that situation, other people would be on the same situation as well, maybe not with the same Exchange, SQL, whatever, but at the time with some kind of situation. And the good thing is that Microsoft actually released the nested virtualization. And with that feature, that actually helped a lot with building this. And this is exactly the main purpose of my session today. Funny though, I was in Redmond about 2 weeks ago, and the Hyper-V PM, Ben, he's actually sitting here, he was doing a demo for the MVPs pretty much about this session. And they actually copied my idea. That's why I invited him here today to actually, he not only copied my idea, but he actually, how can, if that is a word for, a better word for improved, this is what he actually did, a hell improvement of the of my idea. He stole my idea. he actually, we're going to that point, but he actually built a 8 nodes cluster of 8 Hyper-V machines running on Windows 10 desktop. That is just massive. Right? Can you just think about this? It's just in one notebook running 8 Hyper-V servers, and on top of that, how many VMs?
16.
Jesus, I need that desktop. He's not leaving Brisbane with that desktop. So that's the main purpose of this. Can I just ask here, because I'm just going about a little bit about Hyper-V. Who has experience with Hyper-V here? It could be with Windows 10 or server. Good. So some people doesn't. So I'll just play a little bit what quick with what Hyper-V is. I'm sure most of you can just Bing, Google about what Hyper-V is. Hyper-V actually will enable you to run another machine on top of what the machine you have today. So that's pretty like a summary of what can do. This would be pretty much what we can do. You can run other workloads and create another virtual machine, another machine on top of your machine. You can do this today with a server version or with a desktop version. So there are some requirements. So I would say, from a software perspective, you need to have some versions of Windows that you can do. So these are the versions that you have. So if you have Windows 10 Enterprise or Windows 10 Pro, these are pretty much the two versions that supports virtualization. There's another good thing is that I actually don't know if I can say this. If I breach the NDA as MVP, I just know that after this, I'm not going to be MVP anymore because my PM is here. But he never told me not to say this. So the Hyper-V that actually runs on the Windows 10 is exactly the same Hyper-V that runs on the server. But there is a bonus, if I can say like this, for those who are actually running Windows 10 than those that are running server. And the bonus is nothing to do with the actually OS itself, but because of the one program from Microsoft called Windows Insiders. Because with Windows Insiders, we got updates pretty much like what, every week, every 2 weeks. It means that the Windows, the Hyper-V that is running on your Windows 10 is more up to date than your server. Because you will always get updates on Windows Insiders. I don't know if I can say this again. If I lose my and my MVP after this, you know what. So, and about hardware. So I put this on here, but I'm sure pretty much all the machines we buy today are 64 bits and does have virtualization enabled on the BIOS. So if it's not enabled, you can, it's just a setting, you go there, virtualization, and you just need to enable this. It's pretty much what you need to do. So I just put here as a minimum of 4 GB of RAM as on your physical machine. That's pretty much because on top of what you're running, you actually have to run the hypervisor, and on top of this, another VM. So it makes sense to have a minimum. But if you have a machine with less than this, you can actually install. Okay, this is just, as I said, as a minimal so you can run other workloads. So how can I check if my machine actually is prepared to have this? So you can go, if you have, as I said before, if you brought your machine, just go to the command prompt and run this command. systeminfo.s, and you're going to find out if your machine has the what is enabled to have a Hyper-V feature. If you actually enabled already the Hyper-V or the virtualization, you're going to get something like this. So if you have Hyper-V running on your machine and you run this command, you're going to get something like this. Hey, already detected. If you don't, this is what you're going to get. So you need to have those as yes in order for Hyper-V to be supported on your machine. Right? So if I remember here, it's 6. Yeah, my machine. So that's exactly what I get on my machine, right? A hypervisor has been detected. That's pretty much because I actually have already Hyper-V running on my computer. If I go here, systeminfo is not only giving you information about Hyper-V, but other information about your machine. So pretty much very easy. I remember before we used to have some sort of third-party tools that would tell you if your machine was compatible or not. Today, systeminfo, pretty much easy. So if you're not, if you need to enable, these are the settings. I put here, this I think is from Dell, if I remember. But pretty much most of the hardware vendors will have something similar to this one here. So you can enable here. You need to enable those two. These are those two settings that you need to enable on your hardware. So make sure you enable those. So how can I actually install Hyper-V? So that's actually very easy to install Hyper-V. I'm the old school. I go to add and remove features. So you just need to go to this. So that's going to open. And the only thing you need to do, you just need to enable Hyper-V. You don't need to do anything else. Once you select this one, the machine will restart. Done. You already have Hyper-V installed on your machine. Once you have done this, what you need to do, you need, sorry, let me cancel this one here. Hyper-V manager. And that's what you get. This is actually the management screen for Hyper-V. So what I need to do now? So then you need to decide now and need to plan how you're going to do. Why? I was having a conversation with one of the guys today about they are planning to host some training on and having like a small data center on every machine. He was asking me if he would have a desktop as a base or a server as a base. I did ask him about the network. So today, I always used to have server on my computers, always. I changed it when Windows 10 was released. Why? Because of the wireless. I have a problem with wireless, and I need the wireless to work for my virtual machines. In that case, some hardware vendors, I'm not going to name those here, but some of hardware vendors have a problem with Windows Server running on a notebook. And sometimes they don't have the driver for the wireless. And it just doesn't make any sense to have a machine running and you need a VM and you can't use wireless. So I decided then to move to Windows 10 desktop. So in this case, I have my wireless running here on this machine. It's all supported. This machine has all the drivers from the vendor, all running. So what I do is, when I need to create my, when I have the Hyper-V here, first thing I need to do, create the network. I would say that's the first thing you need to think about, how you're going to create the network. There are three ways to have a network with Hyper-V. If you want to have a way where the machines talk with each other only, but don't talk with the host, it's called private. If you want the host to talk with the virtual machines, it's internal. If you want the virtual machines to talk with external, let's say to do anything that you need, like a website, for example, you're hosting a website and you need someone from outside to access that website, it's external. If I'm talking too fast, or please let me. Oh, I think I closed the wrong one. So normally what I do, virtual switch manager, you can select external, internal, private. When you create the virtual switch, so you can name it, let's say external. So this means, this is just a name, you can give the name you want. If you can see here, I can select wireless or my other adapter. Unfortunately, we still have issues with wireless, right? If you select wireless, means that you are exposing your external connectivity to your virtual machines, because this is external. Sometimes you lose connectivity on the host. The virtual machine is still working, but the host can't go to the internet. Sometimes the host goes to the internet, and the virtual machine doesn't go. The good thing is the PM is here. He just told me, we are working on this. I will show you how to get around of this. Sometimes it's actually not a fault of nothing to do with Windows itself. It's the wireless router. There are some issues with some wireless router. And the machines, the reason for this is the machine doesn't get IP. That's the only problem. It loses the IP. So what I do sometimes when I got to that situation, I manually set up the IP on the machine. Then it works. So I know, for example, let's say when I have a problem with my router at home. I did try many routers, didn't work. So what I do is when I'm home and I need to work with my virtual machines and I need the virtual machines to have access to the internet, I manually set up the IP on every virtual machine that I need to have access to the internet. That's what I do. So if you ever find this situation, the best way to do, manually set up the IP and we work fine. So I'm going to create this as, let's say, internal. So that's it. I told already I create an internal network. It means any VM that I connect to this network will only talk with the host and the virtual machine. Well, here, how can I create actually a virtual machine? So what I need to do? New, virtual machine, and then go through the steps. Name of the virtual machine, let's say demo. Where I want to store the virtual machine. Normally, as that's just me, but I recommend you to do this, something similar. I do create a folder, and I store all those virtual machines on a particular folder, but it's up to you. You can store on the Microsoft one. I actually always do something like easy for me because I don't ever remember that path. Then we have generation one and generation two virtual machine. There are many differences between those two. I'm not going to details of the difference between those. I would say generation two doesn't have, for example, floppy disks. I ever remember was the last time I actually used floppy disk. Maybe 9 years ago, 10 years ago. I really don't remember the last time I was floppy disk. So some of this. Other things is iSCSI. Generation 2 has iSCSI and as the main connectivity for the hard disk, and the generation 1 is not. It's to IDE. So that's one of the other things. There are many differences, but that's not the purpose of this. So let's go and select here, generation two. Then you select the memory. So there is one thing that I'm gonna talk about when you select the memory here. Two things. If this is your Hyper-V server, so think like this. You installed your base, and now you need to you're gonna install a server, right? Inside of every server, you're gonna have other virtual machines. If this is the case, this machine here needs to have at minimum 4 GB of RAM, and you cannot select dynamic memory. Dynamic memory means that the virtual machine is running with, let's say, 1 GB, but if there are more or less, you can change this on the way. With static memory, you can't. So in this case, my machine is not a host. Where it's going to be connected, I can select here internal NIC. And then I can create the disk, I can set up the disk that's gonna be here, drive C, and I can add more disks later. And the operation system that I'm gonna install. I can install here, I can install later. I know already where the ISO is. I can click here, select. On my case, I have the ISO running somewhere. I'll explain why I put on this folder here. So this is where my my ISOs are. So what I did, I'll explain later. It won't make any sense to explain now. So I just select the what I want to install. Let's say I want to install a Windows 10 on this machine. Next, finish, done. With this here, I just create another virtual machine with Windows 10, for example. You can do this with whatever you want. Windows Server, you can install SQL, you can install Exchange, and there you go. So there is a catch here. Is you saw that I just installed a machine, right? If I start here, come on. Easy, the machine will get the ISO from the folder that I select. It's gonna ask, okay, what do you want to do? What do you want to do? Next, install. Now, installing Windows 10. Could be installing anything that I wanted. So this is how you're gonna do. So you're pretty easy. Let's say now you actually, instead of installing this, yeah, accept, next. So this is now installing one VM. I'm gonna pass this. That was quick, see? So here are the supported guest OS. And supported by Microsoft, because I actually have a machine at home running Windows MS-DOS 6.2, I think. So someone asked me, what can I run? I said, it works pretty much. If you install and it runs, just try. Even someone asked me today if I can run ESX on top of my Hyper-V. I said, just try. It's not supported. So this is what is supported. So this is the number of virtual processors that you can have. So if you install Windows 10, you can have 32 virtual processors on the virtual machine. If you install Windows 8, you can have 32 as well. If you install Windows Vista, don't know who is going to install Windows Vista, but if you have to, and so on. So this is what you can do. I know there is still some companies out there, for example, running Windows Small Business Server on those old machines. So what you can do, you can actually P2V that machine and have that machine running here on your desktop. great, right? So these are the Linux guests that you can run. So all these things that I'm showing here, it's true for the server version and true for the desktop version. Remember, there is actually no difference between server and OS in terms of code. Some features are not supported, but yeah. So I did already this one. So and then we go to checkpoints. So what checkpoint is? Let's say I'm running my virtual machines, and I want to install a SQL Server on a virtual machine, and I want to play some coding with that, or I want to install a web server, I want to play with that, but at some point I'm going to say, hey, I need to install something again, but if that got corrupted, I want to move back to where I was. So that means what you can do is you can take a copy of that machine as a checkpoint, and when you need, you just need to restore. So let's try to go there. Six. So what you need to do, you can click here. Sorry, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to take this one. You can take a checkpoint. Because this machine is still running, I don't know what, yeah. It's still installing the machine. I don't want to check checkpoint by this one, but I'm good. So with this one here, I'm taking checkpoint. One thing, you can see this here. So I have a production checkpoint created. The only thing is, this machine, Hyper-V, is a demo that I created for this lab here. It still doesn't have the nested virtualization enabled. Once you enable the nested virtualization, it means you can run a virtual machine on top of another and on top of another. You cannot take the checkpoint when the machine is running. See, the machine is running, you can check a checkpoint. The machine needs to be off for it to work. Ben actually going to talk about this later. So another situation. You did your work and you have another machine, or you actually built something that you need to move it into production, right? You build on your computer and then somehow you need it to move to your data center. What you need to do? You just need to export. Or you can actually, for example, you need to play with what you have already in production. You can go to your production server, take a checkpoint, or take a copy of that one, of that machine, and import to your local machine, play with that. Once you did whatever you need to do, if you need to copy back, you just need to export. So it's compatible between those. Right? So an export can be used as a backup, restore, move a virtual machine from your machine to another machine. Really easy. So there are some things that we need to be aware of when we do the export VM. One is register in place, restore virtual machine or copy virtual machine. There are some things that we need to be aware. One actually is important for you to understand is when you export or you import a virtual machine, all the files together, they go as for the other host. So when you restore, if you want to restore as it was or you want to restore as another VM. So that's how we need to decide here. And the virtual machine configuration, that's actually tricky. So depending on the version that you're running Hyper-V, or where you create the Hyper-V, every virtual machine will have a number, configuration number. So my machine is running, as you can see here, I have a machine with version 5. It means it was created with Windows 2012, is that true? Yeah, and then I have another one This is 6.2. It means it was created with, I think, TP2 or something?
TP3.
Yeah, I don't remember the versions. So every time you actually update the Windows version and you create another machine, another from scratch, it will change the version. But you can also convert a virtual machine that's running from one version to another. Why I need to know this? Because you can't have a virtual machine running 6.2 running on a server that only supports 5, for example. That's why you need to know this. So if I go here to my... So I just did a command to get the status of the VMs running on my computer. So as you can see here, I have some machines. This one that I just created, demo. The Hyper-V one, which I actually created this morning, because this morning when I woke up, I saw the message from the team saying, hey, TP4 just got released. So then what I did, I downloaded the Windows Server TP4, and I did install. So these are the version. And I actually updated my host file with the new Windows 10.5.8.6, something like this. So make sure you always have your base server up to date. Go back here. So that's another good thing about having Hyper-V running on a notebook, is the standby. Most of the notebooks have the standby, and this is now supported, which means you don't need to power off your computer. Hyper-V will actually support this feature. And PowerShell Direct. So who here at any time played with Linux? You don't. So actually, that's one of the really cool features I found that Microsoft did create. Sometimes I need to run some commands on another machine, remote. I don't want to log on that machine. I just want to run a command from my machine, and I want that command to be actually executed on the other machine. We can do this through Linux. We couldn't do this from Windows. Now we can. You can actually run a command from your machine, and that command will actually be executed on any machine that you have running Windows. Actually, Windows 10 or Windows Server 2016, right? So that feature is called PowerShell Direct. If that is something that do recommend you, who actually plays with PowerShell here? Yeah, a few. It means for those who doesn't, I do recommend you to really get started playing with PowerShell. I know it's difficult sometimes to hear this. Are we going back to Linux times or whatever that we can call this? But definitely, for those who doesn't play with PowerShell, you really need to start looking how, because most of the things that you need to enable for, when you need to do commands in a batch or do repetitive commands, PowerShell is the best way to do this. So you really need to think about Ben, actually, his demo, he actually created this cluster of Hyper-V by using PowerShell. So he only ran one command. And actually, the name of this session when we went to Redmond was Hold My Beer While I Build a Cluster. He did nothing, only press the key and say, okay, you guys watch, see what's happening. And he was there sitting, and the script was actually creating this whole cluster. And you'll see he will show here. And that's what I'm saying. So think about PowerShell not only for do things like, okay, I need to just see the VM status of things like this. Now think about using PowerShell as to carry on things like automation, or you need to run a lot of things at the same time. Think about PowerShell to do this. So what do we need for PowerShell Direct? Again, we need Windows 10, Windows 2016. the guest VM needs to run Windows 10. It means not my only my host. My guest VM really needs to be running one of those OS. You need to be logged as administrator on your host. So when you log on your own machine, for example, you need to be an administrator of your own machine. I'm assuming it's your own machine, you're already administrator. You need user credentials for the virtual machines, and the VM needs to be running, of course, because you want to execute something that's running. So, sorry. I left the good stuff for you, Ben. So let's see here, I have this machine. So this is the machine that I created before Hyper-V, right? But I still have another one called demo. I can do for both, so that is you guys use express settings, whatever. So before I do this, I need to tell one thing. I created my Hyper-V server. Now, on top of that Hyper-V server, I want to create another virtual machine, correct? Because that's the purpose of this. I want to have my physical machine, and I want to build a private cloud. For me to build a private cloud on top of my physical, I want to run Hyper-V on top of Hyper-V, then I'm going to create my VMs. So how I'm going to install the OS on those virtual machines? So what I did when I create my this one here, you remember what I did? I went to, let me cancel this one here. When I create a new virtual machine, I selected, hey, this is where the ISO file is, right? So that's the problem, because when we have another virtual machine running, there is a size limit where you can copy a file between one machine and another. In reality, I can copy, let's see if this is running. Let me use this one as an example. I can copy anything from my host to this virtual machine here. That is in theory, because if the size is more than 2 giga, you won't be able to. So there is a limit of 2 giga. So now, let's have a look on the size, for example, of my ISOs. So if I look at the size of the ISOs somewhere, the Windows 10, for example, the size for this one is 3.6 giga. So how am I actually going to copy this one to the Hyper-V server so I can actually install all the virtual machines? So Ben is gonna tell you how he did, and I'm gonna explain how I did. So the way I did is actually nice to be Internet Information Services. So I actually install another role on my host. Remember that I went to progress and features and I selected Hyper-V? I also went there and I selected Internet Information Service or web server. Why is that? Because there is no way to copy an image more than 2 giga from one site to another. So what I did, I actually deploy a web server. Then I copy all my ISOs to this web server. So now every time I go to a virtual machine, what I need to do? I just browse to that web server, right? I'll show you what I did. So so this is the IIS. What I did, I actually had to do one thing here. Director browsing, I enabled, right? You have to enable this. And now you have your website with whatever you have there. So because this is pointing to this for the call inet pub wwhoot, so it's pointing here. What I did, I create a folder called setup, and all my ISOs are on this folder. So now every time I need to download or I need something, I go to the MSDN website, I download the images that I need to install, and I copy all these images to this folder. So this is like my library. So now every time I need to install, that's easy. I browse to that folder. In this, I can, just as an example, I can go here, localhost, setup, which is the folder, right? Then I got all my images there. Make easy to deploy. That's the way I found to actually was Ben's idea. He thought, you can actually deploy a web server and then you download the images from the host. That's how I actually did to pass the tricky of copying one image from one machine to another. So PowerShell Direct. So let's see, I have then a machine running and the machine name is called Hyper-V, right? That's the name of my machine. So I have one called Demo, I have one called Hyper-V. So I want to go and enter to that machine. You can do this, for example, you can go here and say enter. Oops. And then VM name. And then, for example, demo. It's gonna ask for the password. I hope if I remember the password. Come on. Good. So as you can see now, I am not on my machine anymore. I am now on demo. Anything I do here, I am doing on demo. I'm not doing on my machine. So if I whatever I do here, this is machine demo. It's nothing to do with machine, my physical machine is demo. So that's one way to do. You can run commands, you can execute configuration. That's why PowerShell is just good, because now you can execute the PowerShell commands against this machine. You're not on your machine anymore, you are on another machine. This is really good. So there is another way to do. So I'm now back to my physical host. I have one here, for example. This one here, this is on the top of the screen. This command means for me that I am still on my host, but I don't want to enter on the session. I just want to execute one command against that virtual machine. So what I'm doing with this machine here, I don't think I have the machine called Win10 Hyper-V running, so I have to actually change this to Hyper-V. So I have a machine called Hyper-V. I'm going to run a command to say, hey, get all the services that are stopped. Any services that stop. So if I run here, Thanks. Let's see if I remember the password. I always trick with my passwords. Cool. Love this. You gotta be kidding me. Okay. No idea. Should run. Let me see. Just fun. Yeah, that's actually fun. Should be able to run this. Maybe I'm not running this as administrator. So let's see. Boss be here, that's good. He can solve this issue. Unless the machine crashed. Actually, I know why. Sorry. How about I actually type the correct? Sorry. My bad. Apologies. Happened. I change the username and password all the time. So this is actually showing which services are actually stopping, and here it shows the machine, the service, and is stopped. We can change this. We can actually run other comments like, hey, instead of doing this, I just want, for example, to find out the IP. There is no IP on this machine. Why? I'll show you why. Because today, this machine has no network. Okay? What I can do, I can come here, internal. Okay? This machine now have a network. This machine has a network, but there is nothing here saying which IP the machine will get. So I have one machine running here. It's off. Which is called Windows 2016 DC. This machine is actually my domain controller from my whole environment and has DHCP. So it means this machine will actually provide DNS, DHCP for my whole environment and also domain services. That's another thing you need to do as well. So, and now let's go back to and I will have my friend and boss here to show. So what you need to do now is there are some scripts. I run the script. He just told me this morning that I actually don't need the script anymore to enable nested virtualization. So I'll leave that to Ben now to show. If you can see here, I did run a script before. What the script is going to show is, hey, this machine here does not support nested virtualization. This is because this machine was running TP3. Okay? Now with the release of TP4, you can have nested virtualization. Another thing is Windows 10 supports nested virtualization. So you can have Windows 10 on top of Windows 10. Okay? What you can't have is Windows 10 on top of 2016 TP3. But TP4 is released, so you can have it.
Shall we switch across to my demo system? Let's see if this all works. So this is my system, which Alessandra was talking about. This is actually a demo that I built for the MVPs. This entire system was built by a single PowerShell script, a nice short one, only about 700 lines long, and it takes about 80 minutes, so I'm not going to run it here. But this is kind of the result of what happens. And you can see I have a bunch of virtual machines running here. And if I jump in, I have one installation of Windows Server with a GUI that I actually use as the management console. And I do want to highlight that these are all running on a private network. So there's no connectivity to the outside. There's even no connectivity between these virtual machines and the physical host. And if you have a look on the side here, you can see, OK, I've got two domain controllers running, I've got a DHCP server, I've got my management console. The first thing I have running, which is kind of fun, is I have a 4-node storage spaces direct cluster running. And these are all virtual machines running here. And if I go in and have a look, you can see, okay, I've got my 4 nodes. I can have a look at the storage. I've got my volume. If I have a look at the enclosures, You'll see that I have four enclosures and all the disks and so on. This is, side note, this is just a great way to play with storage spaces direct because you can do it all on a single computer. But the real fun thing is I then have this 8-node Hyper-V cluster. And these are 8 virtual machines with nested virtualization. Each of these virtual machines is actually running a TP4 nano server with Hyper-V enabled. But if I come into my management console, I can have a look at...
Just one sec. Can I ask, does anyone know what nano is?
So nano server, thank you. Nano server is a new deployment option we have for Windows Server. It's a really lightweight, stripped down version of Windows Server, which makes it actually great for these lab environments because it uses a very small amount of memory. So if I actually jump back here and have a look, I can have a look at this and say, memory, I've assigned each of these nodes 2.5 gig of RAM, and I've actually got 2 virtual machines running on each node. And nano server is nice because it's not using much of that memory for other things.
And to make another point here, his notebook is about
It's a very good notebook.
That's why he can have like 8-node cluster node. But again, you can still do this if you have, for example, 16 or 8 like I have. I have about 4 VPOW machines running on my computer. I have one domain controller with GNSS and GACP, and I have one SQL server, one as assistant center. So that's normally what I have. So it's just 8 giga, which is normal.
Yep. Everyone should have 32 gig. Okay, I want 64.
You're not leaving Brisbane. You know, actually, you're leaving, but your notebook is staying.
So, it does get special attention from security because it looks. Anyone who sees this says, "Why do I have a notebook from the 90s?" Because it looks like that and it weighs a ton. But so I have an 8-node Hyper-V cluster. And on top of this, I actually have 16 virtual machines running nested on top of that. And this has full functionality. I can do anything with these virtual machines. I can live migrate them. I can do whatever I want. And what I've actually done is I've set each of these virtual machines up to be a container host operating system for Windows containers. So if I have a look at this system. This is just pulling. This is the first one. So this is a virtual machine running on a virtual machine. And I can go ahead and I can even do. Go ahead and create a container on it. Oh, and I got an error. I haven't created a switch. Duh. Let's just skip the switch then for the purposes of demo. And I can start container. So by this stage, I now have an operating system running inside an operating system inside an operating system. I had a discussion with someone on the team the other day where I said, We keep on putting operating systems inside operating systems, and it doesn't make it easier to manage. Surely the solution is more operating systems. But if I enter into this, I'm going to be able to do everything and use this container just like if it were running directly on physical hardware as well. So there we are. We're inside the container now, several levels deep. Alessandro asked, what's the limit? There actually is no limit. It does get slower the further down you go. But we have, I believe in our test labs, we've run up to 5 levels deep. Now, a side note, one thing that we've been discussing is this is great for test and evaluation. And this whole environment was built using a script for the MVP summit. And one of the things that we use to demonstrate the sort of flexibility that this gives is at the beginning of the session that I did just a week and a half ago now, I actually asked the MVPs, hey, what are we going to name the domain? And changed the domain name right at the beginning of the session and built out the whole environment, which is why if you pay attention, let me see if I can find this somewhere, you can see that the domain name is .hypervbear. because that's the name they chose. So that's the demo in a nutshell. Do you want to come back up? And I will say, yes, this is a monstrous laptop. I got it about 6 months ago because we were working on nested virtualization. It has 32 gig of RAM, but even better than that, it has two SSD drives in RAID 0. And even then, when I boot up this whole environment, the hard drive light is on solid for a good couple of minutes while it comes up.
Thanks, Ben.
Six.
So, what I would like to show here was nothing.
Better now?
Yep.
Sorry, good. So, it was exactly this. How can we actually build something on top of my machine that's just running Windows 10? The machine that Ben is running is actually the host, is running Windows 10. It's not running Hyper-V7 or anything. What he did.
And I'm not even running any secret builds here. This is just the latest update to Windows 10 and the TP4.
Yeah, that's the good thing. As I said when we started, if you're running Windows 10, it means you're going to get always, especially if you are on a Windows Insider, and I recommend you to be on Windows Insider, means that you're always going to have the latest Hyper-V version. Even when, and I don't know if I'm wrong on this, but even I think when Windows Server gets released, because there is no Windows Insider for the server, always you're going to have Hyper-V up to date and with more features on Windows desktop than actually on the server. I think that is actually one thing that we are discussing 2 days ago. What is not available on Windows 10 Hyper-V? And when I showed this slide to Ben, he said, some of the things are not true here. Because now, with the update we did for Windows 10 a couple of weeks ago, you can now have remote FX available. So what I mean with this is keep always looking, because some of the things that here it says not available, maybe in some time will.
And the other thing to highlight is with a number of these, while we don't have them in Windows 10, if you use nested virtualization and run Windows Server, you know, I've done live migration on my laptop, strangely enough, live migrating a VM between two nested instances of Hyper-V Server. Similar thing for Replica, similar thing for shared VHDX. So once you start using nesting, you can start using all of these while still having, you know, Windows 10 as your primary experience.
So, and how about license? So this is another thing that Ben pointed out, and I think I'll leave him to explain about the license for the MSDN, which is actually really good.
Yeah, so actually a question here, how many people here have MSDN subscriptions? Fantastic. One of the things we often get questions about licensing, especially for people building these sorts of development and testing environments. And one of the best kept secrets is that in MSDN, we actually have a subscription which is just called the operating system subscription. It's actually the cheapest subscription. I haven't checked the prices recently, but somewhere around $700 a year. What? No longer available. Ah, when did they change that? Okay, it used to be really good. this is what I get for talking about licensing.
That's okay, but what Ben is telling is go for something that will enable you to build as many VMs as you can, and the MSDN subscription does allow you to do this. Remember, we're talking here about your machine test and dev environment. We're not talking about production, right? Please, you can't use MSDN on your production environment.
This is why I don't talk about licensing.
If you are a Microsoft partner, I think there is another one called Action Pack, and I think the price is around that $500.
Alternatively. This is why I don't talk licensing. I will say, alternatively, get employed by Microsoft. We get really good prices.
So that's it, guys. Thank you very much for coming. If anyone has a question, please, one more thing, please. I need to beat Ben on his own session. Make sure you give me the highest score on the evaluation. I'm not kidding. You're not going to sleep the weekend if you don't give me the highest score.